listening to a special podcast recorded at the Royal Holloway Science Festival on March 23rd, 2013. The festival itself was a week-long event starting with a bee opera. You can find out more about that on episode 178. Included a discussion of science facts and science fiction behind the War of the Worlds, and culminated in an open day for the public. There was a science alternative fate, displays from the departments, and us interviewing scientists in front of a live audience. This podcast is brought to you by The Pod Delusion. The Pod Delusion is a podcast about interesting things, from science to culture to politics, all from a pro-science rationalist point of view. You can find out more at poddelusion.co.uk. This interview is with Professor David Cohen, who is a theoretical computer scientist and is predictably from the Department of Computer Science.
So, I guess the first place to start would be, what does a theoretical computer scientist do?
It's true that we all see computers everywhere in the world, and we have computers on our desks, but almost all the computers we see, we don't see. Computers run large companies, computers run accounting, computers solve problems for us, computers run cars, computers fly planes. Computers don't do more things than they used to do because computers have got faster and smaller. Really, they do more things than they used to because we're much, much better at programming them. We've got new programming languages, we've got new architecture, we've got new constructs, but most important, we have new algorithms. So the way in which you write a sequence of instructions to tell a computer what to do, we have been inventing over the last 30 years new algorithms, new techniques, more efficient algorithms, algorithms to solve new problems, and that's what's taken the world by storm. Theoretical computer science is the study of the mathematical, the underpinning of what makes algorithms good. How do I design algorithms? How do I tell if they're good?
So is the big thing algorithms because it's all about wrangling, you know, all the big amounts of data we've got now? Is that why we need these algorithms to keep improving?
Okay. One of the things that algorithms have been able to do is deal with really big data. And really big data is a current change. And not only big data, but they're distributed over many sites. But algorithms also are much better at controlling robots. We've got faster feedback loops. We've got algorithms that search for... We've got algorithms that search for data in marketing. And most people now have got a phone that will only take a picture when you see somebody who's smiling. Inside that phone, there's an algorithm that's somebody has designed. For 20 years, people have been working on software algorithms for recognizing faces. So it's not just about big data. It's everywhere you see computers, they get faster and better because we're putting better algorithms in them now. And understanding the limits of computation is the key to theoretical computer science.
Is there any limits to what sort of algorithms and looking at things like that can do? Because one of the things I think is fascinating about the internet at the moment is how a lot of the time these things go back to a Mechanical Turk. Amazon have a service where you actually employ humans to do stuff you'd think would be mechanical. Like Facebook moderate their photos by employing people in other countries to look through them all.
One of the golden goals of artificial intelligence, which is a branch of computer science, was to make computers that can be intelligent like people, which is a nice idea, except that people are already intelligent like people, so why would you want computers to do that? So actually, there's been a trend away from that, and we're not trying to get computers to do the things people are good at. I like to quote, a computer does 2 billion things a second. A human being has time to count to a billion once in their life. It takes 30 years to count a billion. If you do it all day, every day, 24 hours a day at one number a second. So computers do things blindingly fast. They never make mistakes. So if you've got huge amounts of data or you need utter reliability, then computers are good. If you want to produce intelligence, then people are very good. Having said that, you can reduce costs. Well, perhaps that's not a terribly good thing, but certainly you can make computers more approachable if you can give them an intelligent interface. And just recently, the Turing test, which is the test, can you tell the difference behind a screen whether you're asking questions of a computer or a person? and the Turing test has been broken.
Oh,
they
really?
did a mass test in an auditorium, many thousands of people, some computers, some people up on the stage. You didn't know who you were talking to. You asked questions. Everybody answered. And more of the audience voted the computers as people than the people.
Those poor people. That was their thought.
And last year, and this is really worth Googling, last year, the American TV quiz show where...
Jeopardy.
They pitted a computer against the best ever Jeopardy players, and the computer won. And it wasn't connected to the internet, a standalone computer. A huge beast that took years to train. But computers can do apparently intelligent things.
So how many years away are we from, say, Siri doing, you know, being like a human being?
Siri
on the iPhone, you know, when you...
I don't have an iPhone, I've got an Android phone. How many years are we? Well...
Presumably because it can be all done in the cloud. It can be done relatively quickly. It's not like we need to wait until we can do things in handsets that powerful.
Handsets are incredibly powerful, probably the most powerful computer you own. But I think that interfaces have improved beyond recognition from what they were even 10 years ago. I don't yet know whether interfaces like Siri are the answer. Computer storage is immensely large compared to what it was even a few years ago. It is now perfectly reasonable for me to embed a chip in my shoulder that records every conversation I ever had. And then if somebody says to me, but you didn't say that, 10 years later I'll be able to search through my own shoulder chip and say, yes, I did, and play it back to them. I just quite fancy that.
One of the interesting things that constantly crops up in computer science magazines and technology magazines is the quantum computing. What is quantum computing?
Well, here's the problem that they're trying to solve. Computers have got faster and smaller because computer chips have got faster and smaller. There's a limit to how many transistors you can get on a computer chip. And the limit is a transistor's got to be at least as big as an atom. And at the moment, computers are running with transistors that are tens of atoms big.
Oh, wow.
So everybody said, well, computers can't get any faster. Moore's law, computers double in speed every 3 years and a half in price, has got to stop. It didn't stop, because instead of making computers faster and smaller, we put more computers on a chip. So now you have quad-core computers, or arrays of computers, or the cloud. So there was a tremendous amount of research into alternative computing paradigms. And people looked at quantum computing because... when you allow quantum effects, that is equivalent to doing an infinite number of calculations all at once.
Oh, wow.
And you wait for the... if you could build a quantum computer, so you could set it into the right state and you could wait for it to settle down, it would produce an answer without having to do all the calculations one at a time like we do at the moment.
I guess one final question as we're getting there. So you're a theoretical computer scientist. What are we going to have in 10 years that we don't have now?
I like to predict what we'll have. I never predicted mobile phones. I failed to predict tablets. I failed predict the massive increase in speed in internet communication. I did predict data storage, which was already growing, and computer power. I've got no idea what will happen. I can tell you something, though, something which is very odd, that when you, in 10 years' time, will think we always had it. If you ask people about the internet now, or mobile phones, they can't remember a time when their mobile phone couldn't direct them along the streets. and so the rate of change of technology and the way it's affecting our lives every day, and we're just We're consumers of technology in a way we never were before. We just expect it every year to improve our lives. And I don't know how...
Could there be a limit? Could it reach a point where we can't get things better? I mean, the thing I think I'm really obsessed with is batteries in phones are increasingly rubbish. Have we hit a limit? Is there anything we just can't improve?
Battery technology was why phones were so big and why phones were impossible. Mm. But it's phones that have driven battery technology. It's gone the other way. And now batteries are incredibly small and incredibly long-lasting. So the companies who make phones have made them into really high-power computers, so they use your batteries really quickly. Batteries need to improve a lot before we get robots working. The thing that holds back robots now is you can't make batteries small enough and powerful enough to run robots for any significant length of time. And I'm really... We can make robots to jump. We can make robots to walk up and down stairs for about 20 minutes. And I'm really looking forward to the time when we have effective household robots that can do real tasks. Maybe that's the future.
Cool. And if anyone wants to come see you, as you'll be running around the Science Festival, where can they find you?
They can find me in the Computer Science. That's in the Windsor Building on the first floor, room 102 and 103. We have fantastic robot displays. We've got gadgets. We've got computer games you can play on. You can learn to program. And we've got a whole lot of computer professionals who will be able to answer any of your questions.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And that's it. If you'd like to hear more interviews from the Royal Holloway Science Festival, just head over to poddilution.co.uk. You can also catch up with our over 3 years of archives from a regular show and special events like the Royal Holloway Science Festival. Thanks for listening.